And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Welcome along to the GAR. This is the Hurling Show on a Monday. JJ and Michael are here in studio with me. And, like, I mean, it was a good weekend of hurling. The club final was absolutely sensational. The Wexford Galway game was very good, and the Tipperary Dublin game was the most bizarre game that I've ever watched in my whole life.
Well, how
can we even, I don't know how you're going to explain to me how what went on here, but we'll talk about that in part two. I want to start with the club final, because, like, I mean, I saw some tweets. Paddy Stapleton was saying that he would just love a third match. Like, people just want to see these two teams. They're so well matched and so evenly matched that, like, I mean, for a second time in a row to have such put on such a good show, by far the two best club teams in the country going head to head. The hurling club finals have been saved after loads of one-sided games in recent years. Let Coolin and Piercy play each other every year. They're both two good young teams, that there's no reason why these two teams won't dominate.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise you really next year to see the two lads back. Like, they're absolutely, the standard of hurling was unreal. And look, Coola were so lucky the first day to come out with a draw, and again they could have won it an extra time. Con missed a shot from 30
last
yards,
week,
which wouldn't be like him exactly last week. So they would have been delighted to get the replay. But the standard of hurling was brilliant, and Coola, I thought they went away from the way they played the first game. They're normally running off the shoulder, and they went quite long. And I thought the Pierce got their tactics spot on. You know, like, they cleaned out Con in the full forward line. And Casey was brilliant at fullback. Like, he's going to be a real, really good hurler for Limerick in the coming years. But the second day, they went back to a bit to what they're good at, passing the ball off the shoulder and scoring from distance. And
I was watching the game on in a house, and there was a lot of people in there, and it was kind of a bit of a barbecue, so I wasn't able to watch it. But it looked to me that on one side of the field there was loads of space for Shute and Conor Callaghan and all these lads, and on the other side of the field, when the Pearcy cleared it up, there seemed to be numerous bodies up there. So, like, I mean, Coola seemed to have more bodies in defence, and the Pearcy didn't seem to have the same, I don't know, numbers back there. But it must be just the systems both of them used.
Yeah, it wasn't too clear, to be honest with you, when you were watching it. But, like, Mark didn't have the greatest of games the first day, but he was really, really back to his old self. And on Saturday he was excellent, and I think he finished with 1-3. But the goal he took was brilliant.
Yeah, his goal was outstanding.
Yeah, he's so direct when you're playing, and that's when Mark's at its best. He was coming out a bit deep in the first game, so hopefully Dublin can persuade him to come back this year.
Yeah, I think he is going to go back. There's a whole load of them. There's Keane O'Callaghan, Usheen Goff, Sean Moran, Darragh O'Connell, Sean Tracy, David Tracy, Colm Cronin, Jake Malone, Mark Shute. Obviously Paul Shute pulled his hamstring off the bone again, so he won't be back in. This is a sensational Coola team. We should focus on Coola because they won. Now, they got out of jail the first day, but to come back to back, they only got out of their group in Dublin, JJ, on scoring difference. So, like, it took a while to get this engine running, but when it gets running, they're a seriously good team.
It shows a good team like that, like, you know, they find a way to survive in the first game and then come back and win the second game there as well, like, you know. But we spoke about before, myself and Mickey, before the podcast, they're a well balanced team. You couldn't say, right, we'll stop one or two and the rest of them will fall in, because Conor Callan didn't score a huge amount, but then near the end when they need him, or the last 5 minutes, he won a free near the end to get an insurance point. And that's what they do. Different players stand up to the market at different particular times as well. And phenomenal team, like, and they're setting the benchmark for all club teams out there at the moment.
Yeah, Sean Moran's the find, I think, Willie, as well. The two games he was the man of the match for me. He was unbelievable. And Dublin are sort of looking for that centre back figure at the moment as well. I think he's going to slot in there brilliantly.
Do you think so?
Yeah, I'd move Chris to the wing and I'd put Sean a centre back, because he's cleaning up. Like, he's winning the dirty ball and his distribution is excellent. So I think he's a big find for Dublin hurling.
Yeah. So there's only five teams in history have won back to back hurling titles. Three of them are from Galway, and Galway, obviously, we know don't have a province. So, like, I mean, that's a huge difference not having a province, because we know how difficult it is to get through Munster Club and Leinster Club. So, like, I mean, like, to put it into context of what Coola did, only, I think, three were Galway, Coola, and the great Burr team won back to backs. You know, so, like, I mean, this is it's just a massive, massive achievement to have that motivation. But, like you're saying, like, they've too many match winners. Who do you mark? Like, I mean, and then Con and Shute will just take you on, and you have to drag them down. Like, they are kind of, and they play a sweeper, do they? They get bodies back. They might not play a full time sweeper.
They're just so fit with you, they can get bodies behind. Right. But they're very attackive and very offensive. Yeah. Very offensive when they come at you like that.
Yeah, but
they come in droves.
It must be the fitness. They've loads of men back, but they've loads of men.
Yeah. They're up and down the field. They don't really have position. Say, to have far lane, a midfielder, just go where the team
needs. They need to go. Yeah,
exactly. They're not saying, right, you can stay at 10, you stay at 12. Hmm. If the ball goes back in the half back lane, go back and get it and bring it up the field. And they carry a lot of ball as well. But they also have the out ball of Marshall. He's very, very strong in the air now as well. Like, you know, and you see him when the ball goes into him, when he turns his man, he's very, very direct. He put the head down, went past the second Piercy lad and straight in for the goal. That was a phenomenal goal, like, as well.
Phenomenal goal, yeah. But like, I mean, Mark Shute is not like he's a good club player. Mark Shute has done it for Dublin big games. He's like a top intercounty level
Darryl
player.
O'Connell got probably the score of the year as well. He caught a ball in his own half back line and he finished on their 21 off the stick. Like, it was an unreal score. Yeah. But it showed his speed and fitness. Like, he just left everyone for dead.
Talk about that Darryl O'Connell, because I was reading about this, I didn't spot it. It's very hard when you're watching on telly. You really have to be at these games. But Darryl O'Connell played wing back in the drawn game. He was back to midfield then in Port Laoise game, and then Adrian Breen was cleaning up and he was put back in corner back on him. Yeah. I was reading in one report, like, I mean, so that was a great move from Matty Kenny.
Yeah.
To be moving your midfielder / wing back, he's more of a natural midfielder.
Yeah, absolutely.
Back into the full back line to take care of somebody.
Well, Adrian Breen got, I think it was, three exact same balls into that corner, came out and over shoulder over the bar, so he had to do something, because if that kept up, they would have been out of the game straight away. So, and Adara, I've seen him play wing back and I've seen him play midfield, so he's a good marker and he'll do his job for the team. You know, he just does what he's told.
Yeah. So. Na Piercic had some issues around the referee after the first game. Whether you agree or disagree, a lot of this stuff is subjective, but the free count in the game in Port Laoise was 17-8 to Coola. Which, like, I mean, that's a big kind of variation in the amount of frees. If in a 50-50 game, it shouldn't be that lopsided. So I don't know. Like, I mean, Na Piercic will have a fair argument if that's the free count.
It is, but again, it's probably have to ask yourself that question: why is the free count so high as well? Like, you know what I mean? And if the referee is going against you, don't give an excuse. Give them a free as well. Stand back and make the other guy score really more than that's what you have to do. Really, but again, if you make the decision very easy for the referee, he's going to blow it all day, every day. Like, you know, so if they are going against you, it's time to actually just stand back and kind of usher your guy over to the sideline, maybe, or something, and make him shoot and give him the hardest possible angle to shoot before you actually dive in and make a decision for the referee, for argument's sake, you know.
Yeah, and maybe it's the fact that Coola like to take you on and these lads go at you, that you know,
and
it's easier.
They're so physical, they're so big, like big men.
Okay, so maybe we won't go too hard. 17-8 is fairly big. I want to talk about Ronan Maher sending off yesterday, lads, because it looked very harsh to me. Like, I mean, Ryan O'Dwyer, like, I mean, it's not usual you see hurlers go and fall fall onto the ground like that. There was nothing in it. He put his arm around his kind of neck, but, like, I mean, that's not a yellow. I know it is a second yellow, but, like, I mean, I don't think a fella should be getting sent off for something like that.
No, there's an Oscar in there for Ryan. He can be a bit theatrical at times, but look, he put his arm
he's
around
his neck. He's a hardy
whore,
doesn't mind being theatrical. It's like kind of a bit of a contradiction there, isn't it?
You'll see him on the ground about 10 times with a physio around him, but he does throw his body in the time. Like, so he's in the mix of things. Look, he put his arm around his neck. I can see where the ref was coming from first. Like, the arm did go around. There wasn't much contact made, but he made it a bit easier for ref, you know, with the arm going around the neck, and sometimes it's just 50-50 when whatever way the ref
it just looked easy. Bad really, more than anything, you know what I mean? But again, every player up now in the country has made that foul for themselves as well. When you see an arm there, you wrap it around your head and you'll jump back, like, you know what I mean? You'll get the free all day, every day. But look, again, is there a yellow card? Are you hurt that much in the ground? You're not. You get up and go on with it, but it's kind of, you make the free yourself, whereas you shouldn't really get a yellow card for the other opponent, you know.
It's actually mad how bad you can make those ones look. Yeah. If you actually go off your feet, you could look like he's actually to have to try to take the head off you. Like, you can actually get a fella sent off of that. Yeah. Once you feel that contact there, and usually the contact is enough that if you go off your feet, it will pull you back. You can get somebody completely sent off and they look terrible. They look like they're really, really dangerous, and a lot of the time they're not.
Yeah.
So Ryan himself got sent off. Ryan himself got sent off in 2013, the semi final against Cork, and there wasn't much in it either, like, you know. So he's been on the other side of it as well. Yeah. So he should know better.
The thing about sending offs, I thought Danny Sutcliffe should have been sent off for the knee on Paddy Maher. That was a really dirty challenge now, and I haven't seen Sutcliffe playing in a while. But, like, I mean, is this a new tough guy Sutcliffe, because he looked to be very aggressive and very kind of, maybe he was just up for it, but like he was in kind of altercations with Heffernan as well, and like it, but he, it was a general, God, Jesus, Danny Sutcliffe's up for this one anyway.
No, that's Danny Woolley. Like, I remember when he first came into the panel, and I'd be marking him constantly in training. He's a super hurler, but like if you put a hand on him, he'd be the first one to swing back. Like, and he's always been like that. He's very confrontational, very in your face. It's something I love about him. Like, you know, it's a reason why I think he got an All-Star. He's someone you look up to in the dressing room as well, because he's that confrontational. You love to have him on your team,
right?
But he does play in the edge, and he was lucky to stay on the hitch after that Paddy Maher incident.
But it was
I don't think the ref caught it fully, like, you know. Yeah, it looked like he sort of half looked like he was trying to jump by him, but he did catch him, definitely.
Yeah, any dealings with Sutcliffe, with confrontations with Sutcliffe?
I couldn't really catch him, to be honest with you. I was going too quick.
Would you have known that this fella has a bit of an edge about him?
I wouldn't have been an edge, like, not in temper wise, in regarding committed for the going for the ball 100%. Yeah, himself and Tommy Welsh had a lot of battles down through the years, and no one would ask any quarter, no quarter given, no quarter taken either, you know. So two of them go head on for the ball, like, you know, and the best man will win, like, you know. So again, you have to have that temperament for it. You're not going to stand back and let, like, the Paddy Maher now clear every single ball you can, you know what I mean. You're going to stand into him, but again, on the ball as much as possible as well. But again, I like forwards like that you know you're going to be marked physically on your body when you come off the field, that they are going to hit you, they are going to physically hit you as well. So that's what you want as well. It's a man-to-man game as well.
I'm sure Paddy will remember it as well.
No better man there. No, there's no doubt about that. But I we'll talk about that game again, because I was saying that that's just, it was bizarre what happened. I want to talk about this because I saw this on Twitter, lads, and it was, I think it was a stats account, Don't Foul, that tweeted this out, or else he retweeted it. I might not be giving credit to the right person, but it was the amount of players used throughout the league on each team. So different starters. So Dublin had the most. Dublin had used 34 hurlers throughout the league. Kilkenny next, then on 30, or maybe it's not in descending order. Kilkenny had 30, Galway 33. The lowest then, Clare were on 28, Wexford on 25. So it's very obvious from seeing the players used what focus has been on the league. So different starters, I thought, was an interesting one. So Clare had the least amount of different starters, only 20. 20 different starters throughout the league, throughout the five games. Dublin had 30, Kilkenny had 30, Galway had 29, Waterford 29, Tipperary 28. Do you know what I mean? Like, you see how some teams used it to develop their panel, and you see how some teams used it. Like, Wexford had 22 different starters, and they would have, like, I suppose a lot of the teams would have had Fitzgibbon. Well, they all would have had Fitzgibbon starters, but like, it's just very obvious to me from looking at that on Division 4, Wexford and Clare have gone mad for this league. Dublin haven't, and that's a very brave thing for Pat Gilroy, considering that he's a new manager. He's still gone out there and went, maybe being in Division 1B has been a big help to that. But in Division 1A, you've got Kilkenny, you've got Waterford, and you've got Tipperary, all using a lot of players and all starting a lot of different players.
Yeah, well, I find that, like, for me, really, it's a rebuilding process in Kilkenny and Dublin. They're trying to find their feet again. They've lost a lot of players, new players coming in. They're going to have a lot more people in the panel to try out. I think Clare and Wexford are at a more mature stage where Davey knows his team now. He knows who's going to be there for championship.
Yeah. And but that's the thing though as well, and Clare and Wexford are the same, but aren't we all talking that a lot of these teams now, they need a panel for these Munster and Leinster leagues? It doesn't look like Wexford and Clare, maybe they just know they're 15 and they're 7 and they don't need any more outside of that. Like, I mean, how many do you need, really?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, like,
yeah, it's going to be interesting now to see later on in the year if that actually works out for these two teams. Like, you know, Wexford have, this is the first time they're up in Division 1A now, so they want to go all out for the league as well, and look, they've been very, very good as well. They have probably their nucleus of team, you could probably name probably 13 of the 15 starters now for Wexford and Clare. You couldn't say that with Kilkenny, you couldn't say that with Tipperary at the moment, you couldn't say that with Dublin either, you know. So it's, and again, Waterford, they've made no excuses about the league. They're using it to try out players as well. So it's going to be interesting to see. Again, it's the first year of this Leinster League and Munster League as well, so different management teams have different approaches to the Leinster League and the Munster League. So it's going to be, again, we won't know who's going to be correct or right until after the league, and who's qualified and who's not qualified, you know. But it's interesting to see it out. Clare and Wexford, they have their first 15 and they seem to be very, very happy with it. But it's interesting that they have a couple of systems of play, of actually how to play. So they want to get their 15 on the field to actually perfect their way of actually playing the ball. You see them, they're playing a lot through the lines down and everything like that as well. I suppose with Dublin, they're unlucky, didn't have the cooler lads as well. Just, as you mentioned, 7 or 8 lads to come back onto that panel as well. Like, you know, so that's not going to strengthen their team as well.
Yeah, no, it definitely will. So, like, I mean, you see Michael Ryan said after the game against Dublin yesterday, he said some of the lads in our 26 today have never been in Croke Park in any other capacity other than a supporter. Like, isn't it ghastly that Tipperary are in a league semi-final when literally they've been coming at this league as in whoever's on the starting 15, we don't necessarily want you, we want another 15. Like, I mean, but then again, it's like the question I asked, how many more do you need? Yeah. But like, I mean, he seems to be keeping his extended panel. If you were on that Tipperary squad now, you'd be happy as Larry, wouldn't you? You'd have, after playing a few games, you'd feel an awful lot more included in the squad than others, and I'm sure their A versus B games are hugely benefited from that.
Yeah, hugely. And then you see the likes of Bubbles come back on there yesterday as well and knocking over a couple of points. Just to remind Michael Ryan that he's still about there and he's back in towards fitness as well. Like, you know, it's great competition even for players, and likes of Ronan Maher's been a lot midfielder as well this league as well, where we've always seen him as a centre back or a half back. Like, you know, and Cottle Barrett was always a cornerback, but he's playing midfield now as well. He's given himself a huge amount of options there as well. I think Tipperary's squad probably has performed the best throughout the league so far, and I'd say Michael Ryan would be very, very happy with that too.
Yeah, definitely. Read something yesterday, Davy Fitz has never been beaten in Wexford Park with Wexford, which is a great stat already. And like, I mean, that's going to work so well for them when it comes to the Leinster League, because you play home games, and if this has now become a fortress where the longer this goes on, the more teams will want to go down there, and then that whole thing, you know, becomes a psychological thing and it becomes a huge kind of weapon for Wexford. Like, I mean, trying to get that home fortress, like, I mean, I'm sure you struggle with it, Michael, because one day you're in Croke Park, the other day you're in Parnell Park, and like, I mean, it's so important to actually feel that this is our home turf, they're coming in here, you know, we're going to win this one. Like, I mean, you need to develop it, and a big important part of it is support. Wexford have fanatical support. Wexford Park's full. That adds to that whole sense of it. And JJ, I'm sure you had it in Nolan Park as well. Like, almost the contrast of what you had in Nolan Park with support to what you had, Michael, with no real home and not much support.
Yeah, well, Dalo tried that when he came in. It was his main goal, making Parnell Park our fortress, and he called it a fortress all the time. Like, you know, bring them in, close the gates. Only one team. Like, it's what he's good at. But there's still belief within the team, like, you know, that we weren't going to be beaten there. And we had a really good track record there under him. And again, when you get offered Pro Park, Manders don't turn it down, because that's where the big games are.
Yeah,
it's not your fortress, it's not your home, and probably Kilkenny are to play more up there more than Dublin do. You know, I know it's in Dublin, but they'd have more experience in that pitch. But it definitely was a thing he tried to do, was make Parnell Park our home and our fortress, and we did buy into it, we believed it. And I think the crowd did as well, because crowds started to get, it'd be packed out for home games,
right,
which was great. And you see the hype that Davey's keeping up, and he is keeping it up in Wexford, and the belief in the players, and you see the way they played on Saturday, they were brilliant, like looking up and finding men, and you can see that they're buying into it, and it's working. Yeah. Like, you know.
And that roar from that stand, I was down at the Kilkenny game when they beat you in the championship last year. Not you weren't playing, but your county.
Yeah.
But the roar that comes from that stand, and it's noticeable that you really hear it even on the telly.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, this is a big weapon for Wexford to get that stand behind them.
But even, you know, when Wexford reports are going well, even after, if you look at Davy Fitz's after match interview, there's around a couple of hundred people around him, you know what I mean? It's
all adults.
Yeah, it's unreal, yeah. Because after the match there last year against Kilkenny, I was on the sideline for Sky Sports, and I was down on the sideline, and they were just mobbed around me. It's just finale. It's brilliant, brilliant to see when they are going well. These supporters are one of the best supporters in the whole country, and over the last probably 6 or 7 years, they're crying out for a team to support, and they're coming in, and they're going in back behind these Wexford teams, well, because the Wexford teams, after giving them a lot of enjoyment over the last couple of years, and they can see him progressing all the time as well. They're just, even seeing the Leinster final last year, the amount of, was it 40,000, 30,000 Wexford supporters up at it, they're just crying out for something to support, and they have that team at the moment as well.
They have, they really are the noisy neighbours though now, JJ. You need to shut these lads up. Like, these are getting into a situation that they could be out of control here very soon. They need to be stamped out. Another thing quickly I wanted to ask you, as me not being a hurling man, as you well know, Conal Keeney lost his hurl yesterday, and he proceeded to tackle Paddy Barr. Now, he was shadowing him, And I'm just wondering, what is the rule here if you lose your hurl? I thought it was a free as well. I was like, how is he getting away with this? You can't tackle the man, right? Tell me what you do when you lose your hurl, how you're meant to act.
No, you do exactly what he did. Like, you slap and you try not to grab. Like, you've seen a footballer come out and him. I thought it was a free all day, but I thought Paddy failed him in the first place to get the, so maybe the ref was looking at that, letting 50-50 go, like, you know, I let him away, but it was definitely a free. Like, you can't slap a ball.
You're just hoping he doesn't throw the ball in front of you, because you've nowhere to go. When you're tackling him with no hurl and he throws out the ball in front of you, you just have to stay there and take it, like, you know what I mean? So you're just hoping that he gives away a free. I'd say Paul was halfway happy that he gave him a free away. He wasn't going to get hurl broke off him.
So that's it then. So you're basically, you've nothing to protect yourself with, so if he throws off the ball to throw it, you just have to take, you have to block this with your body. Yeah, Jesus, that's interesting.
There's no one for you now, will he?
Yeah, that definitely is. But definitely Conal. It's definitely not in the rules what he did. Because I was like, because you're not allowed, right, you can't tackle the man. So imagine you can just run alongside him with your arms out and pray he doesn't.
But then if he goes away from you, there's no way you're going to block him down or hook him. So the only way you're going to really realistically try and get the small percentage of time to get the ball off him is when you have him held straight in front of you.
Right.
If he breaks away, there's nothing you can do. He clears the ball, you've no hurl to hook him or anything like that either.
No. And would a bat, would someone really, would kind of some bad fecker throw the ball up and see as a sitting duck? Would that be something that they would do, like,
you,
here, this lad, would you,
well,
say
the ref can't give you a card, will he? You're just throwing the ball up.
How quickly would you spot this lad as no hurling on
open after the first slap?
Quick enough, says the two hatchet men across the way from me here. Right, one other thing before we move into part two is robbing Slitters. Did you see the footage of the young lad, lads?
And no, I missed that.
It brought me. Oh, so there was a ball. This was very opportunistic. It was behind the goals, but there was a gate open. So he sprints in off the gate, right in close enough to the goalkeeper, takes the slitter off the ground, and then it's out the door, out the gate again. But I just remember when I was younger in the Moor Park, and it brought back memories, is we'd camp behind the goals, and there'd be some free takers that would drive them high, and you'd know, right, this is coming out. And it would go over the goals and over the netting, and there'd be about 20 young fellas that all sprint down the steps, and there'd be a big round for the slitter.
Another
thing, if you got the slitter, you'd go home.
Doesn't get any better than this.
You wouldn't watch the rest of the match. Like, you weren't there for the match. You were there to get a slitter. And if you staged it, there was a chance they might take the slitter off you. So you just had it. Did this happen all over the country?
Absolutely.
In education, even when you're down your club training, you're trying to go home with a couple of boys, and you'll competition with three or four young lads your own age, and many balls did you get? You get three or four. So that's, it happens up and down the country, right?
Yeah.
But it was an opportunist. It wasn't his first time robbing a slitter, anyway. He was in and out before the gate even closed.
He has a big future ahead of him. I'm not sure what the future is going to be.
Good or bad.
It will be big, anyways. Right, listen, we'll be back and have a look at the matches.
Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. Beans. Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. Beans. Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans.
Try and make sense of this game. So I mentioned this at the top of the show. So how can a team start a game in the manner Dublin started it? Look, absolutely sensational, to the point where you're thinking, Jesus, this whole plan is coming together, and then so dramatically fall apart. Like, I mean, is this a belief thing? Is this having your confidence so brittle that even the slightest sight of a comeback and you're completely down in two? Like, it just made no sense to be able to be so good, Michael, and then so brutal. After 12 minutes, they were gone.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if they thought themselves, right, now it's Tipperary's turn and now we're going to stand back and try and defend. Like, they started, they were so fast, they were taking scores from everywhere. Now, some of the scores you wouldn't see, like, they were 1-10, but they were all going over, hurling really well. And then it was like, oh no, we shouldn't be doing this. I definitely think it was a belief thing, Willie. And then they stood back, they weren't looking up, they weren't finding a man, and they just, it went to disarray. I think they should have shown a bit of cuteness, and that's where I think the inexperience comes in. If a team gets 4 or 5 points and you, someone go down injured, break the game up, take 5 minutes out, have a word around the place, right, let's get back to where we were. They just let Tipperary score 8-9 on the bounce, and then I think Chris went down with his eye, Chris Crummy. But by then it's too late, the time's passed, like they're catching up with you.
Yeah,
it's very hard then. And I think the biggest disappointment was the man sending off. Like, you have half time to talk about that. It's one thing if it happens in the second half, and
the game wasn't over at half time.
No,
like,
absolutely,
well,
4 points in it. Like, so you're saying 4 points in it, we're playing 14 minutes second half, we should win this game. Like, definitely you should win this game, but you're actually worse in the second half. Didn't use the man at all. Like, he stood in front of their goals. They still got a goal in the second half, which never should happen if you have a spare man back there. And Tipperary were taking points at will
from out the field. Yeah.
And I know the Dublin half forward line, like Connell, Danny, and Burke, all pull back the pitch to try and get ball. And if the lads were finding them, it's great, but they weren't. They were looking up blindly, hitting the ball up, and it made the half back line look like gods for Tipperary. Like, so Paddy Marsh was cleaning up, and they also give some space to find a man with the forward line without any pressure on them.
Yeah.
So it's very hard in the backs then to. You know when you're in the back line and someone's looking up, it's very hard to stop a fella getting the ball, and just fell apart fully. You know, it's hard to put your finger on. I think it's naivety and just inexperience of, like, and that belief to keep that lead, because they hurled really well for 15 minutes.
For 15 minutes, and then it all, but, like, I mean, it's from listening to Michael there, it's all over the place. JJ, there's no set necessarily game plan. The half forward line's dropping deep, but they're not being. If they're dropping deep, you need to kind of use them to make the half back line honest. If that's not happening, then you're driving it down to a full forward line. And Jesus, sure, it wasn't sticking. It just wasn't sticking in the Dublin full forward
back up, like. But I'd say Dublin in the back of their head probably expected Tipperary to come with a period of dominance, but when they did, they just let it happen. You know what I mean? You need to react to these kind of things. A team like Tipperary are definitely going to get a run in 10-15 minutes, and with that 10-15 minutes, they can absolutely bury you. Like, they have scores all over the field. John McGrath was just, the goal he took was phenomenal. Like, he went on to a break, he was 25 yards out, but anyone else would have took the point, but he stayed going and had a composure. Actually, he could have took the easy pass and passed it into the full forward, but he took the goal himself, the unexpected shot, and he just took over, and he was floating around the field, and it doesn't look to be sprinting at all, but no player on the field can get near him, you know, so he's just in the right place at the right time. But I think, as Michael was saying, Dublin need to kind of address it. Like, fair enough that happened now, but if that happens again now in the Leinster League or whatever, that it's going to have to be rectified. Someone has to go and take the game with a scruff neck, win a hard ball, win a free, and get a score like that and break their Tipperary's momentum or the opponent's momentum. So when something like that happens in a big game like that, you have to learn from it. So if it happens again and again, then I can see a problem, right? But if it happens once, fair enough, no problem at all, address it, rectify the next day. But if it happens, keep on happens again and again, there is a huge problem there.
It always amazes me in the GAA, because I'm including Gaelic football and hurling in this, is that if you have a man sent off, the default is to use the extra man in front of your full back line.
Absolutely.
Like, I mean, why can't you use him? What I would do, if you have a spare man, put him in midfield over at the sideline, and you stay out there, and you're an out ball every time. You're a spare man. Like, I mean, that's going to hurt the other team. When you play it in the defensive position, you're not really asking any questions of them. They just have to watch out for you. You know what I mean? The spare man.
Yeah.
But you're not making their defenders go, who's marking him? He's just a defensive kind of extra man. I don't. Why is that culture there? And why would you not push up your spare man into the half forward line and really rattle? Then Tipperary would have had to bring back a forward to mark him.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And ask questions of them. Why is that there?
I think it goes to show the mentality. It's a default decision, Willie. Like, managers who are tactically astute, I think it's a confidence thing. Or make sure we say, like, stop goals. But in that decision, like, they were playing so well 15-on-15 for 15 minutes, so they know they can do it. And if you're an extra man, I agree with you fully. Play him around the middle, create that spare man, create havoc there. You still have all your backs. And again, I just think it's confidence. You don't have the confidence in your players out there at the moment to go out there and win this game, and you're trying to be safe. But I know you're playing Tipperary, and they are great at getting goals, and you have to stop them getting goals. But it wasn't working. They were scoring points from out the field all day. So the man in there is doing nothing, you know, because they're just taking points from out the field. So you're non-existent. And they weren't giving sharp hookouts. Any sharp hookouts I've seen going to the full back line, the full back was getting it, and instead of running at the man or taking him and giving it to the wing back, he was hitting the ball 80 yards, which the goalie could have done in the first place.
Yeah.
So I don't know why you're hitting sharp hookouts. So I don't know if it's something they've worked on or they're going to work on, but I think lads who you want, if you want the ball to get to take a ball short, you have to have confidence. I don't think they look like they want the ball off the goalkeeper in the back line at the moment.
Just so. Are players, obviously the cooler lads coming back in is going to give them more options, but like, I mean, if they're a bit all over the place tactically here, how's that going to make much of a difference? And which begs the question, is Gilroy brought Cunningham in from Galway, who was ran from Galway by a team that went on to win the All-Ireland. So this is a team of winners now who decided as a group, this fella is not for us. And then Dublin took him on. I don't know. Like, I mean, am I being too harsh here?
Yeah, I think you've been a bit harsh.
But if their game plan's all over the place now.
Well, yeah, but if you look at Andy Cumming's record, he got him to a couple of Irelands as well. Like, you know what I mean? He brought him so far. Fair enough, he couldn't get him over the line, but he brought him up to that level. And then obviously Micheál Donoghue now brought him over the promised line. But you have to give him a lot of credit in getting, there's not many teams to get to a couple of learnings there on trot there as well. But yeah, they're going to have to. But again, you want your best team playing the system to make it actually work. It's never going to work perfectly all the time, but you need your best players out there as well. And for argument's sake, if you put Paul Shute or Mark Shute into that full forward line, the ball will stick a lot more in there as well, because he's good in the air and he's strong and get kind of runners off him as well. So he probably is a big player for Dublin as well for this thing to work, and hopefully now he is going to come back.
And the likes of Sean Moran and Keane O'Callaghan and Darragh O'Connell, they're used to winning. They've played in All-Ireland, they know how to win, and they perform on big days, Willie. So they're bringing that experience into the dressing room of saying, look, I've played in Croke Park, I've won here loads of times, I know what it takes to win. And they use the ball brilliantly. They look up and find men. And if you bring that to the back line, and then you bring like the likes of Mark, like if the lads are getting the right ball in there, they will do damage. Like, it's not all doom and gloom. And Fintan McGibb, a young lad, came in yesterday. He was very good in the middle of the field. He got a great score out in the wing and took on two tip men. And like, there is positives there for Dublin. It's just they can't keep talking about the cool lads coming back. They have to perform. Like, Limerick are performing now without the new Pearshig men.
Yeah.
So there's no reason, there's no excuse why Dublin can't. So you can't go back to that default all the time of let's wait till the Cure lads, because they're going to be having a 3 or 4 week break now themselves. We've club championship now in April. Cool are playing in 2 weeks' time. It's a bit unfair in them.
It's unreal,
start the whole cycle again, all over again. But like, they're not going to be with them. They're only probably going to be with them for 2 or 3 weeks before championship. Yeah. So as much as you can get done, and then I don't know. Like,
yeah.
But
yeah. How many cooler lads get? How many cooler lads come back into that team? Then you're almost counting five, are you?
I'd have five starters anyway. At least five starters. So that,
it's a big addition to a team.
It is. And they're very good hurlers. Yeah. Like, so, and as I said, they have the experience. So I think they'll bolster that team hugely.
And I think the danger of playing Ryan O'Dwyer for me had a bit of a nightmare. I think the whole full forward line had a bit of a nightmare. Now, the ball coming in wasn't great. It wasn't the type of ball the Coolad give in or anything, wasn't it?
Like, no. I mean, it was high 50-50 ball.
They were winning none of them.
No, and I know Paul in the corner and Hayes in the corner, they're flashy hurlers, they're really good and they have the ball. But 50-50, they're not great at coming out and winning.
Right.
So you have to be giving it the ball in front of them, and if they get it in their hand, there's no better hurlers. Like, they both got two points each yesterday, or I think Paul got three, but again, the ball going in was 50-50, and Tip are so physical and so good in the air, they were just coming out with ball after ball. So it's something you have to work on with Dublin. Like,
yeah,
you know,
that's what Gilroy said, we won great ball coming out of the fence, which they did.
Yeah.
Like, some of their defenders, one-on-one defending was great from Dublin, and then said, but then give it up cheaply. We weren't doing that at the start. We made a lot of very silly mistakes after those first 10 to 15 minutes. You get punished when you do that against the likes of Tip. But some of these lads were winning a good ball, bursting out of the fence, but they had time to pick out a pass, JJ, but they were up almost clearing it up. It didn't seem... What are they working towards? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
are they working towards Tipperary
type?
You say playing in between the lines, which a lot of teams are doing now. Dublin don't seem to do that. I'm not sure what necessarily they're trying to do.
I suppose that you can have tactics until you go out in the field, and probably a player, you could be telling him for the last 3 or 4 weeks, play through line, play to the advantage of him, but then he kind of gets the ball and bursts out past the Tipperary attacker, and then right and going to score a point myself or lurry it up as far as he can to get a big roar from the crowd. You know what I mean? It's you don't know when player cross the line what way they're going to take over this now. But again, they're going to have to take a bit of responsibility from now on. Again, they're going to have to learn from the mistakes they had done yesterday as well, and if they keep away cheap possession like they have done yesterday, they see what Tipperary done and what they scored after 15 minutes, so they've got 2 or 3 points, and what they finished up with was phenomenal. Like, you know what I mean? So they're going to have to learn from that.
Yeah, it was 2:23 to 10 points to Tipperary after the 13th minute.
Scary. Like,
it was a 19-point swing. Like, a 19-point swing is crazy. Phenomenal. Like, you know,
unreal,
like,
so to go from being that brilliant and that terrible, and vice versa, Tipperary being that kind of, you know, average to being that good. And
but like I think experience really creates composure. Like, and Paddy Smith, the cornerback there at the moment, he caught two great balls over Darcy in the full back line, and then tried to find a man to have back line. He tried at least, went about 10 yards over him, and Tip got two easy scores. So he's doing the hard things of winning the high ball coming in. It's just that composure, and if they get that in training and work on it, like, they'd be much better team.
And against another team with that, like, that might be capitalised against a different team, but Tipperary will punish you every time. They have ball players all over the field now as well.
And this isn't even Tipperary's first team. Like, I mean, this is
there are a lot of new faces,
you know,
yesterday.
A lot of new faces. And like, I'd say Michael Ryan will be absolutely delighted in that a lot of the new faces were tested like that and showed that they have a bit about them. And of course Bubbles back, and like, I mean, Bubbles just looked like class when he came on, didn't he? He just looked on a different kind of level to what he can do, and it just shows that when Tipperary, they're missing Bubbles and Callanan and
Bonner
and the McGrath and Noel McGrath
and Bonner.
Like, imagine what those lads would have done to Dublin on that form yesterday. Yeah. Like, it's just blown them away completely.
Just the two McGraths and Bubbles are, I think, on a different level. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. They're so comfortable on the ball,
their vision is
right or left. You know
it's
what I mean?
It's so easy for Bubbles, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, he's two steps ahead of most other players on the field as well. Like, you know, so if they just get him fit now, he'd be a phenomenal vision.
He didn't. He looked pretty fit. I thought he looked in good shape. I was expecting Bubbles to have a really big arse on him because he's been out for so long, but he didn't actually. He looked slimline enough.
Checking out Bubbles' arse.
Well, he wears those big tongs. Like, I mean, I think it's to disguise the arse, but he's not fooling me.
He's so good. He's so risky, isn't he? If I'm marking him in the past, like, you think you're on top of him and he drops the ball back, so it doesn't matter how close you are for and he has, like, not many people can do it now, in fairness, but he hits the ball about 200 feet in the air and it goes over, like, so he's so good at that. He's very hard.
That's impossible to mark. I always know, and you'd probably know this, JJ, his own Kelly was always impossible to mark, because he'd always throw the ball up away on his side, so there was actually no way of you ever blocking him down.
No, he hits off his back foot as well. He can actually hit it further off his back foot than he is actually standing with his 2 feet on the ground. You know what I mean, it's only a few slick few can do that as well.
Milan does that mad thing where he throws. Does he go off the back foot or just throws it up in a mad kind of style?
He's just too fast.
Right, so who else are we talking in this top category?
Andy, the top players. Henry used to do it off his left hand side as well. He'd be off balance, but he never misses the ball either. You know what I mean? Right. All the top players. Bubbles can do it. John McGrath can do it. Noel McGrath can do it as well. So all the top players can do that. Joe Canning, you see him as well. He's only leads a couple of split seconds and he has 60 yard of a puck in his locker all the time. You know what I mean? You rarely see him miss hitting the ball as well. Like,
Richie Hogan can do it. So
yeah.
Basically every good player is really hard to mark, right? And they have it down. Right, we'll talk about Wexford Galway here, but pretty much about Wexford, because, like, I mean, that was a brilliant win for them, because you think Galway are kind of switching on now and they're playing their full team, and, like, I mean, it was a really, really good win for Wexford, and they've played, like, I mean, scores all over the team. Like, I mean, their full back scored a point, their two wing backs scored five from play. They got four from play from midfield. Before you get to the forwards, you've got four from play, five from play, and 10 points from play before you even get to your forward. Like, this is a different way of playing the game, and it's like total hurling. And I don't think Wexford should be put down as a defensive team, because they have a different way of attacking necessarily than other teams have.
Yeah, their sweeper gives their half back line freedom to roam forward, because they know he's there. And watching O'Keefe and Foley go either wing, like, O'Keefe was superb yesterday. He got, like, score from either wing, and their fitness really creates their support play. Like, they're so fit, they're able to be off the shoulder all the time, and then they're back. Like O'Keefe got a score on their 45, and he was back defending for his own puck. Like, it wasn't as if I'm bunched here, I'm going to send someone else back. Like, they were able to get up and down the line, and himself and Foley are just that support play for the midfielders all the time. And they're like two wingers in soccer, they're just going by you. And then Murphy just slots into wherever's needed then, like, you know. And they seem to have complete belief in their system, and, like, it's a team you'd love to play on. Like, I'd love to be on wing back there, because you'd have the freedom to go up and down the pitch. It's sort of like a football wing back. You don't see it too much in hurling.
Not as much.
Football wing backs are always up and down, and, like, it's the first time I'm seeing it where, like, the two wing backs are just bombing up and down the pitch, and it's causing havoc for teams. People don't know what to do.
And what's wrong with attacking wing backs are more known. Now, I know you'll have Tommy Walsh, and that will score, but not necessarily in the same way Wexford are scoring. Yeah. Tommy might get a long range point, yeah, and he was brilliant at it. And but these lads are getting points in advanced positions. Yeah. You know, they're actually moving up the field.
Yeah, whereas other halfback lads will probably win their own ball, go up the field, and score themselves. Whereas these guys are running in support. They're always there for the support. There's either two or three lads. If you have a runner soling down to the middle, there's one on the left. There could be two on the right.
Yeah.
So they might give one to the right and say that might still might be the wing back, could be the wing forward. But then the wing back is coming on the outside of it. Nearly goes as what Martin is saying. They're like wingers straight up and down the field, and it's again you have to track the runners then against Wexford. Now that's what teams are going to have to do, and will wing forwards have the discipline to do that? I don't think a lot of wing forwards will say, right, I'll let this man go off, I'll go over to the far side of the field and I'll get the ball when it comes back to my end, like, because he has to mark me, I don't have to mark him, you know, that kind of way. So a different mentality against Wexford. Now people are going to have to track them runners, and because again, sure, what they score now, they score more than the forwards from play, like in the starting forwards, like, you know, it's phenomenal scoring from the back line.
This is the thing, and if this is a culture shift in hurling and teams aren't used to it, well then wing forwards won't be in the mood for that. Do you know what I mean?
No, you'd hate it.
Yeah.
You would hate it. Like, and then it tests your own fitness then if you're tracking back.
Yeah.
And then you have to get back for your own puck out, like to win a puck out again. Like, it could change things, and I'd love to see it more because it's great to watch. And then, like, Liam Ryan came out of full back and scored a great score. But it just showed the confidence. Like, they all believed they could score, and it wasn't like they were actually scoring. They weren't just hitting haymakers out of nowhere. So, but like, Wexford are really good to watch.
Yeah. So who have they added then from last year? So by my reckon, obviously Rory O'Connor played against Waterford, but only that was his first ever game. So he's actually a big addition. Foley in midfield is an addition for. So they have a new midfield, right? Because you're trying to see who they're, you know, how they're progressing. Dunn, your man Dunn is in there too. He wasn't there last year, so he's new as well. It's nice to see Conor McDonald coming back into a bit of form. But like, I mean, so they have maybe two or three new players in.
Paddy Foley as well, wing back.
Paddy Foley, he's
travelling last week or last year with work or something.
Right, so you've two Foleys and you've Rory O'Connor who are new, and you've Dunn in the forwards, and your man Dunbar, he came on as a sub, he's kind of new this year too, is he? Or am I mistaken on that? But like Alan Nolan and Harry Keogh, they're coming on as a sub, so now they have a bit of a Willie Devereux who was on it last year. They're all coming on, and Dunbar came on. So like Wexford now outside have maybe 5-6 lads outside of their 15 that. You know, I'm trying to paint a picture that this is an improved Wexford on what we saw last year, because I thought they ran out of steam a bit against the big teams last year.
Yeah, and you see the way they're using Jack O'Connor from the puck out there as well, and he caught three or four off Aidan Hart there, and they had to switch over guy on him. But obviously that is their tactic for him. He's a big, big man as well, and he's strong and very, very physical as well. So he won a lot of frees to start there as well. But just to touch on Rory O'Connor, I think he's going to be an absolutely fabulous hunter. Like, off the right or off the left midfield, I think suits him. I don't think the full forward line suits him as of yet. He's not physically strong enough for it, but he's very intelligent out the field, and just to see him, Lee Chin missed a couple of frees at the start and he stepped up and he scored everything he wanted. I think he's one of these players that has to be on the frees, because when he's on the frees he's involved in the game a lot more, and that brings him into the game in open play there as well. He had a phenomenal game yesterday near the end as well. When you wanted him, he stepped up with a couple of points, and that's what I like about Wexford as well. He got a couple of points, Harry Coe came on and got a point, but then Conor McDonald stepped up to the mark there as well for the last couple of minutes and scored the last couple of scores there as well. So there's not just relying on one guy anymore. We probably have said at start year, if you hold each in, you'd be happy enough, you'll keep this Wexford forward line. But then again, look where the scores are all coming from.
Yeah, there's definitely, they've an awful lot more variety to their team now than, like, they could almost afford to leave Lee Chin inside with McDonald if they needed to. Like, I mean, they don't necessarily need as many players to kind of cover for Chin. But let's quickly talk about Galway, lads. Will they care about this? Will this bother them? Like, I mean, at what point do Galway say, when are we going to wake up here? Like, I mean, it was the first All-Ireland since 1989, wasn't it? 88, 89, they won it, or 87, 88. One of the, it's in 20 odd years anyways, and they've won it and they're back, and then they nearly lose to Antrim, and then they're unimpressive against Offaly for a lot of that game, and then they lose to Limerick, and then you're saying, oh, Galway will get going at some stage. At what point do you start getting concerned, JJ? Because you never had to wait to get going. You just got going.
Yeah, I suppose it's a mentality thing really more than anything. I suppose with division, we were always in Division 1A, and we had to hit the ground running because we were playing teams that we were expected to play later on that year, you know, and we want to lay down a marker later on in the year and say, right, we're not going soft, or not, there's not a soft touch in us, you know, so we want to lay down a marker too then. them to let know that when we do play them later on in the year, we're going to get better again. So we'll try to beat them as much as we can too. But yeah, like, they're most of their team were playing the other day, and I know they had a few positional changes. David Burke was in full forward and Joe was centre forward, but he's playing in the half back then really more than anything. But David Burke is a lot more better for Galway when he's out in the middle of the field. He's a lot more comfortable out there as well, so maybe they're trying a few things now just later
silly
on.
Silly beggars maybe, yeah, with Wexford. Maybe, yeah. They go down there in the championship, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, it's a good dry run for them for the championship, but I can guarantee you they know when they go down there next in whatever it is in April or May, are in May, they'll have a serious game in their hands there as well, like, you know. But they're going to have to. But one big plus there is Conor Whelan again, 5 points from play, absolutely phenomenal game. They couldn't anyone mark him.
Mannion as well.
Yeah, Mannion had a couple of good scores.
He's playing out the half forward.
Yeah,
he's a much
really
better
well.
Half forward.
Yeah,
Mannion,
he needs a bit of space there as well. Like.
He needs space.
But
yeah.
The worrying thing, like, we speak about the cons of like or the pros of 1B where you can test your panel and everything. They've had two tests this year, Limerick and Wexford. I mean, beating them both. Mm-hmm. You don't really know where you're at. Like, the other games are like a bit of poor Dublin team, Leash,
yeah.
Antrim, Offaly.
Oh, if Galway were in 1A, they could be in an awful state
yeah.
mentally.
Yeah, like,
now.
It's very hard for them to know where they're at, I think. Like, and that's really their last big game going into the championship. Yeah. So they're going in relatively asking themselves, they've a lot of questions within the panel, and unless you're really confident and mentally strong, there are definitely going to be questions within that panel of are we good enough, are we the same as last year. Now, they have the players and they're a phenomenal team, but are they going to have that same bite and appetite as they had last year after the All-Ireland win? That's the big question over this Galway team.
Like,
they have
question.
The players, like, you know, but with 1B they've only had two tests so far and they've failed both of them.
Yeah.
So,
and obviously no one only Kilkenny, well, Cork did it in 04 or 05, was it?
Yeah.
They retained it, but you retained it, but Tipperary find it very difficult to retain
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and we don't know anything about this Galway team because we've nothing to base it on how they're going to react. So we'll know at this time next year, the podcast, whether Galway, you know what I mean, or as this team develops on, because it is a sensational team. I think it'll win another All-Ireland, but they want to get the fingers out this year.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We know about your strength and conditioning lad too. Maybe he's got his master plan and he's highly rated that, look, I'm having you ready for May.
Yeah.
I'm not having you ready now, and their legs are heavy from doing weights and running
yeah.
around. And
yeah,
you
that's
don't
again, this time of year we don't know what's going on.
Terrible,
yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, you're only guessing what's going on. You're very reactive then from week to week there as well. But it's just interesting to see, you know, the likes of Adrian Toohey there and Aidan Hart and all these had fantastic years last year. Can they reach their levels again? The likes of Joe, David Burke, all these guys, Conor Whelan seems to be the real deal over the last 3 or 4 years, you know.
Yeah.
So they'll reach the heights, but it's going to be interesting to see the likes of Adrian Toohey. Hanbury as well had a great final. Can he replicate it? Garold McInerney, I don't think many teams will be pucking down the ball on top of him no. anymore, because all his highlights last year was grabbing balls over people's heads. And even see what Wexford done, to put in David Dunne in him centre forward, so to run him rather than like, and then they had Jack O'Connor and Lee Chin either side him, they're keeping the puckers away from him, so they're taking one big strength away from that Galway half back lane as well. So it'd be interesting to see what will teams copy that template as well.
Yeah, no, exactly. Listen, it is very interesting. We'll be back in a second with performance of the weekend.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we have a farm back home, so we have a big farm back home, and we have cattle and sheep, and we have a few donkeys as well. So we had a couple of filly donkeys. So I brought them down, and so we did. We actually sold them to. I think I had 4 donkeys on the day, and we sold them to a man from Wexford. So we did. So there's the piebald donkey, so there, and there's the traditional donkey, and there's the Spanish donkey, and then there's the
Spanish donkey.
They call it. Yeah, you see them on the beaches, never. And so yeah, you can actually one time the donkey was useless, right? But now some people have started to get back into them, because you can use them for headage, and it's used towards your bonuses, your grants. A donkey in Eden, and a donkey in Eden Palace.
Performance of the weekend, and there are a few different nominations. Performance of the weekend, Rory O'Connor was obviously outstanding now in Wexford Park, John McGrath brilliant in Croke Park, but we're not giving it to a player this week, because the only team to win anything this weekend was Carlow, and they hammered Westmeath and Portlaoise in the Division 2A final. And delighted to say Richard Cody is on the line to talk about that. Richard, how did the celebrations go?
Oh, sure, they were very good, yeah. Saturday and had a good celebration there Saturday, and it continued into yesterday as well. So it was a tough, hard league campaign. So I suppose when you get a result at the end of a final, you like to celebrate it properly, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. And winning a final on a Saturday, so you can't ask for anything better than that.
No, I suppose not. No, luxury with the weather and with the snow and that, and the games put off a couple of times. It was put back, and then it was put onto the bank holiday Monday and stuff like that. So, it worked out well then. We kind of looked for maybe that to play it on the Saturday, and whoever fixed the game decided or went ahead with the Saturday anyway, and a double header in Port Leash. So it was a great day, and it was nice that I was on the Saturday as well, and we had the weekend to be able to celebrate it then. Yeah,
exactly. And Kamir, when you won, what did you do? Because obviously there was such a great game on after you. Would you have waited around, or would you have got out of there, or had something booked, or what did you do after the game?
We had dinner booked after that evening, but we stayed till about 10-15 minutes into the second half of the Cool and Pearcy game. It's hard leaving it because it's such a close game.
Yeah.
But we had dinner booked back in Carlow, so we kind of had to leave, had a reservation. So, but we got to listen to it anyway on the radio and the bus on the way home. So. We got in most of the game.
Yeah, exactly. Because like, it's a weird one to win a match like that and then sit down to watch another match. Do you know what I mean?
It is. But then when you win, though, you're in great mood, I suppose, and you're in great form. So you don't mind where you are, I suppose. If you're on the other side of it and you're on the losing end, I suppose maybe you mightn't be as too happy to sit down and look at another game, I suppose. But no, we were very happy to watch that game and see it unfold the way it did. I'm sure it was a cracking game as well. So
yeah,
it was great. Yeah,
no, it was. Your game was more one sided than most people thought. I was talking to Michael Ryan here last Thursday, previewing it, and you know, everybody would have been expecting a much closer game. But like, I mean, it was a domination, really.
Yeah, sure. Look, I suppose it just really went really, really well for us on the day. Going up, we knew it was going to be, like you said, it was going to be a really tough battle. They were favourites. They had beaten us in the first round in the league. And look, there was nothing in that game either. So any previous games that we played against them has only been maybe a couple of points in the end. So form was that it was going to be a close game. But just, I suppose, everything really went well for us on the day, and it's really nice when it comes together on a final and you can look back and say we heard really well there today, and it just when it all comes together, it's satisfying. And it's just when you put all the work you put in during the league and everything, is, you know, when it comes together, like I said, at the end of the day, it's just very satisfying.
No, it must be a lovely feeling in a final, actually in county finals with Portlaoise. I've experienced that, just a really good performance. The last 10 minutes you kind of know the game's in the bag and you can look around into the stand and you're not doing anything, you know what I mean, you can actually really soak it in and appreciate that.
I suppose this is the day, I know it's a close game and you're kind of watching the clock and you're kind of counting down the seconds or counting down the minutes, I suppose. But like you said, if there is a few points in it, coming near the end, you kind of can enjoy it, and you can kind of just, like you said, look up into the stands, or you can hear the chants, or you can enjoy it a bit more. I suppose what happened to us last year in the Crystal Ring final as well in Crow Park, and I suppose last couple of minutes as well, you could just soak it all in. You could soak in the whole atmosphere as well. So yeah, no, it was. The way it unfolded on the day was perfect.
Yeah, it was perfect. And obviously with the crowd of the Coola and the Pearcy crowd all coming in towards that end of that game, like, you had a good full stand in Moore Park, which holds 10,000 people. So the whole day couldn't have worked out much better for you.
No, that was it. Yeah, look, I couldn't have known. It was from the get go, it was perfect. I assure you, you couldn't have written it much better if you tried, tell you the truth. You know, the day itself, after the bad weather we're after having and the sunshine and everything, the day was perfect. O'Moore Park, the ground staff had O'Moore Park in beautiful conditions, and then a cracking double header fixture in it then as well. And like you said, the crowd the crowd coming in and the atmosphere building, and the Coola fans and the Pearsley fans, and they were getting loud and they were cheering on. And in fairness to them, like, they hadn't anyone, I suppose, they were neutral enough, but they were still cheering on scores and stuff like that.
Right. So,
it was very good, yeah.
Yeah. So you've been here before, then, Richard. You've been in Division 1B in 2013 for the 2013 league. So, like, I mean, you didn't win any games. You didn't win any games that year. But I was surprised at how close a lot of the results were. Like, I mean, you were well competitive that year.
We were, yeah. Like you said, yeah. It was. I suppose it was a little disappointing to go straight back down again, but well, as you said there, we were very happy, kind of without winning any games, we were still quite happy the way we had hurling games. And you know, a lot of them, those fixtures, there was very little in the games. We hurled very well, could have got a couple of results. I know down in the Gaelic Park down in Limerick, I just remember distinctively, and we hurled very well, but I suppose they're a little bit of experience and maybe hurling know-how a little bit more, got him over the line. But we were happy enough kind of leaving Limerick that day, knowing that we were after putting in a good performance, I suppose. And yeah, look, we've a little bit of experience, or those lads that would have hurling 1B, I suppose, in 2013, you know, and are still around, we'll have a little bit of experience, but we'll be hoping to, you know, maintain our status in maybe next year.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you mentioned that Limerick game. That final score in that game was Limerick 3-10, Carlow 1-13. Like, I mean, so you got more scores on the board. You know, that was very close. And you only lost to Offaly by 2 points. And against Wexford, it was 16-215. So, like, I mean, very close, you know, regarding how many scores you got on. So, like, I mean, they were pretty good performances.
Yeah, they were. That's what I was saying. We were happy with their performances. I mean, we just didn't get the results, I suppose, and John Myler was over that year. And yeah, without winning any games throughout the league, we were happy the way it went, and just unfortunately couldn't get 2 points, or couldn't get enough points on the board to remain in the division. But I remember the Limerick game again, and we had a great goal chance coming near the end of the game to level it up as well, and I think missed pickup or first touch just wasn't there or something, and I had a thing where I wanted to keep her. But like you said, hopefully those lads that have hurled in it before will have a little bit of experience and we can bring it into next year.
Yeah, no, exactly. There's no doubt about that. Come here, you won the Christy Ring Cup last year, and you won Christy Ring Hurler of the Year. And I noticed that four players are they the equivalent of Christy Ring All-Stars as well. They are the Champion 15 Awards. But I think that's all fantastic. Like, I mean, it's down the levels, but you're treated the very same as the Lee McCarthy teams with the All-Stars and the Player of the Year. And I just think, from a player's point of view, that must be a really good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, sure. The way the championships are run and they're tiered, like, you know, it gives every player and it gives every team a chance, I suppose, to, if you put in good performance throughout your competition, like, it gives you a chance to be recognised at the end of the year, and it's something to really strive for. Look, and I know personally, I was absolutely delighted and I was thrilled and I was. To be given an All-Star and then to get the Hurler of the Year on top of that as well, it was very happy, very very proud moment for me. And I know that the other three Carlow lads as well were very very proud to get the honour as well of the All-Star. So yeah, look, I think it's very very well run by the GAA and the GPA, and it's great to be recognised, and it's great to have the chance to be recognised, I suppose.
Yeah, no, it is. I think it's a fantastic thing, and, like, I mean, that's on the same night as the All-Stars. They're just called out before, or what part of the night, what way does it work?
Yeah we were up a little bit, I suppose. We were up maybe an hour before the Lee McCarthy and the
Sam Maguire
teams, and maybe an hour, and it's run four, I suppose. We're in the same convention and up on the same stage and all, so it's run very like the All-Stars, where your name is called out and you come up on stage. And yeah, so then we go back out and out to the function area, and then the Lee McCarthy and Sam McGuire event takes place, and we went back into the convention centre then again. So it was a great night. It was very well run and very well put together, and it was a brilliant night that night.
Yeah, and you get to rub shoulders with all the big names and things like that, and I suppose
absolutely. That's another great thing to the night then progress or whatever. Yeah, like the conversation to hear background stories from other teams and this, and it was it's great to hear stories and to hear about to hear other lads' years and how they've gone and how they thought they've gone and stuff, and it's great to integrate with other players from other teams as well, like, and you know, lads that you'd have hurled against club or something like that, and you get to reminisce about matches and that, and you might get to chat to them after a game or something like that, but no, it's nice to sit down and have a chance to chat to your fellow players as well. Yeah,
come here, you're from a hurling mad family altogether, Richard. Like, I mean, is it four brothers have played for Carlow, and just a family that's completely immersed in hurling?
Yeah, absolutely. Four brothers played for Carlow. Yeah, we played hurling at all ages up along for Carlow. There's still two of us, myself and Paul. A hurling mad family. We've hurling mad cousins, I suppose, and it's Airy and the three sisters then as well, who played Camogie with her own club and with the county as well. So it was really bred into us from a young age, and anywhere we went we had hurlers in our hands, and when there was so many within us as well, there was always someone to play with or someone to puck around with as well, so it was handy that way. But
yeah, you nearly have
very,
enough for a game just with your own family. You don't have to go knocking on doors at all for neighbours.
Exactly, you nearly would, and I know some games or some little games we did have got very competitive, got very heated at times, I know, and you left with scars or some bloody knees, or you wanted to take it into the next day, or was going to extra time nearly, I'd say, a few times, and I'd say, only the night at times, the night came that the matches went on for a good while longer, yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely.
But, we're all delighted, and we're all very, very proud, very proud to represent our county as well when given the chance. Hurling mad family, all right.
And your older brother Eddie, he's that little bit older. And I was reading an interview from you where you were talking about when he played with Carlow and barely able to get 15 together. And I'm not sure if your career overlapped the kind of bad days of Carlow hurling, or maybe that's the culture you came into and you've seen the change throughout your career.
Sure. He holds the all-time caps for Carlow hurling at the minute. So he's seen a lot of days with the county team. And I suppose, like you said, back in the day, times were a little tougher, I suppose, or numbers were harder to come by, I suppose. And I kind of came on board, I think, when things were really starting to progress, and numbers were. You were always getting good number of squads or numbers for squads and stuff. So
right.
I think maybe he probably seen more of a transition from the darker days to the good days, and he was with it throughout. Yeah. So, but by the time I think I came on board, I think it was becoming very professional set up, and we were well represented by our clubs in our county.
Yeah, okay. Come here, talk to me about, I heard an interview from, I think you were talking to Oisin Langan after the game yesterday, and you were talking about being a very young team. I'm just wondering how much of a new team this is from 2013 when you were there before, or how better prepared you are for the division this time.
It's quite a young team. The nucleus of players, I suppose, there at the minute are quite young. I'd say there's probably three or four guys, maybe five guys, I'd say, that were probably in 13. So it's a relatively new,
right?
The relatively new set up towards 13, or it's a relatively new team or new squad. Yeah, I may be harsh by saying four or five. I'd say you could probably be six or seven players all right, but most of the team are quite young and wouldn't have been around in 2013 when we were last in 1B. But they've all hurled at the top level as well, whether it be with the county or with schools or whatever. Anyway, so they're for a young team, they're an experienced bunch of lads, and they'll definitely embrace this 1B challenge next year.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm sure when you're all having a few pints and celebrating the win on Saturday night and Sunday, you would have discussed playing Galway and Waterford and everything in the league next year and messing about Mark and Canning. Like, I mean, did you chat about that, or are you looking forward to that, or are you just looking back and enjoying the win?
Yeah, sure. I suppose there was a little bit of chat about it. I suppose we were probably in enjoying the win more so, but there was a little bit of chat about it, and I don't know. I think I hear or somebody told me that the fixtures are kind of, the home and away games are already set, kind of, I suppose, from this year's, and I think they said we could have Laois and Offaly and Galway in Carlow, and you'd be travelling to Waterford and Dublin. So right. Yeah, a little bit of chat came about that could be a double header with the Dublin footballers in Crawford or something like that. It'll be great to get the All Ireland champions of last year down to Carlow, and then to be travelling to the All Ireland finalists then as well, to be travelling down to their home patch. So geez, they're great games to be looking forward to, but we didn't look that far ahead, I suppose. We kind of we have the Joe McDonagh Cup to focus our minds on now soon enough again. So I suppose whenever the year ends, whenever we start back training next year, we can start building for the league then, and start focusing our minds on the big task ahead.
Yeah, exactly. Come here, this Carlow Rising movement that's sweeping the country, this is a real thing then? Like, year after getting into Division 1 of the hurling, the Carlow footballers are after getting into Division 3. Do you feel like there's a bit of momentum behind the whole county and supporters are getting involved in it, and the GAA is maybe getting a bit of recognition in the county now?
Yeah, definitely. Look, like you said, there's a great buzz going around the county, and there's a great buzz going around the country, to tell you the truth. And at the minute, you don't go onto social media nearly without seeing something about Carlow Rising. it's really, really good times, I suppose. And there's a great buzz around, and with the footballers gaining promotion as well, and everyone is just kind of chatting about GAA, and anyone you speak to will come up and shake your hand, and you know they're all delighted. And I suppose it's as much for them as it is for the players as well, because you know supporters have seen some dark days as well, and they've still gone to the games, and they've travelled all over the country, whether it be for the hurling or football. And you know it's great to kind of see a smile on their faces and see a little bit of a buzz going around and a pep in their step, I suppose. And you know, there's definitely a bit of momentum at the minute, and it's a great time to be from Carlow, and a great time to be playing for your county in Carlow. So no, we're all delighted now. We're all delighted, I suppose, and very happy. And with the footballers, like I said, gaining promotion as well, there's you know, between the two camps, there's a great buzz between the two camps, I suppose. And you know, when we're training out in Finna there, you can see with their panel, with our panel, you know, everyone is enjoying training and everyone's out early. And you know, it's like I said, it's a good time to be from your county, a good time to be playing for Carlow.
Yeah, nearly too good from a Laois man here. I'm starting to call you the noisy neighbours now.
yeah, this is it.
Come here, Richard.
You've had some great days as well, and these are definitely not going anywhere. So no, definitely is there, like I said, with Laois you're up in 1B, and with footballers you're also in the league final against them, so there'll be some good battles, all right, between the two of us.
Yeah, maybe we'll get a bit of a rivalry going in both codes and have a bit of crack about it. Listen, Richard, thanks very much for taking the call.
No problem at all, Colin, no problem.
Great stuff from Richard there. We will be back on Thursday where we'll preview the semi-finals. Talk to you then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through, but it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because like I'm heartbroken.